Let's do a roll call. Robert.
Robert Follard here.
Phil Chapman.
Phil Chapman, present.
David Michael, present.
Tom McRae, present.
Don Moore, present.
Oh, Don, wait a minute. You know.
I can see better up here.
I don't think there's a seat in the house where I can see. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes from the November 8, 2017 finance meeting minutes?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Is there any public comment? Seeing none, let's move on to purchase approvals.
Okay, good morning. Purchasing approvals for December 2017 for the facilities department, we have two vehicles, one 1997 Dodge 2500 van and one 2003 Chevy Chevrolet Silverado for $6,000. And to the IT department is one 2005 Chevrolet Silverado for $5,000. And for the IT department, we have consulting services with Ace Technologies for $5,250. And for planning development, we have a Madison County Recycling Roll-Off Container Maintenance with Republic Services. And that's a renewal for $6,293.16. And that would be all the purchasing approvals.
Can I have a motion to approve the purchasing approvals?
So moved.
Second.
And roll call. Larry?
Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
And I just want to take a moment and thank the departments for getting used vehicles and not buying brand new ones.
Yes.
Finding vehicles within our fleet to be repurposed.
Great.
Thank you. Okay. Moving on to purchasing resolutions.
And purchasing resolutions for December 2017, we have a resolution to authorize an intergovernmental agreement between Madison County and the Regional Office of Education pertaining to the transfer of excess property. We also have a resolution with CR Systems for facilities management, and that is to designate the that is the janitorial services. And for the IT department, we have a resolution to purchase SAN storage array with Secure Data Technologies. And that was a bid. And that's all the purchasing resolutions we have.
And can we have more explanation on the transfer of property?
Yeah. It's Rob Schmidt. Do you want to address that?
Can everybody hear me?
Just sit down at that mic right there, whichever your preference.
Okay. In regards to the Clay Street property, ROE purchased, the Regional Office of Education purchased this building sometime back. It's been utilized as a office space. However, it has some pretty major concerns as far as ADA compliancy and maintenance issues. The building currently adjoins what is known as the EMA garage, which is on the west side of the jail. Right now, the Regional Office of Education has one or two employees there daily. Those employees are going to be relocated to an off-site office, and the building will be vacant. Currently, the building is in a R1 zoning district with a special use permit for government purposes. And a special use permit for R2 residential in an R1. The current property cannot be transferred back to a R2 because of financial reasons. Even if it was sold, somebody couldn't say, well, we want to make it an R2 property, repurpose it, because the amount of money that it would take to do that would prohibit that from taking place. But the county needs this property because of the fact that we have encroached over the years over the property lines with the EMA garage and parking. which would also deter this from being also used as a R2 or R1 property. By doing this, we can eliminate the building in the future or repurpose the building, but it also helps the Regional Office of Education. They have, Dr. Diver has told me that they will be taking the funds from this and putting it towards the Clay Street facility in Troy.
Freeman School
in Troy. So this is a first step to cleaning up unused property, underutilized property. And during the jail project, we plan on using this as a staging point for officing the workers before they check into and out of the jail. So this is the appropriate time. We have plans for the jail property project to move forward in early spring, and this is the first step on taking care of that. So,
two things I want to add to that, you know, we've encroached on the ROE property, so we've substantially reduced the value of that property. And then the second thing, I think we can all agree that we probably shouldn't have people working in that building. There's definitely a lot of paper storage and so forth as far as evacuation. It's also the stairs and just its general construction and its ADA issues. It's probably not a good idea to continue having people work there.
It was constructed for residential purposes, not for office use. The hallways are narrow. The electric's in Romex. There's five different HVAC units that have to be maintained. There's numerous reasons.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, as a member of the Buildings Committee, I think it is a great idea. I think for $100,000, I think it is a good value to the county. If it was on the market, I would suspect that someone would probably buy it for that. You know, an investor or someone else. I think it's a good value. I think we should continue to look at all these buildings. The county has a number of buildings. One we recently turned over to the city of Madison, and I think that some of these, you know, we need to continue to be diligent in looking at all of our properties and seeing what the best use or non-use of those may be. And I think this may be a future parking lot or something like that, but I think it's a good value to the county, and I'm totally supportive of us purchasing it.
Just, I guess, a question overall. So just to make sure I understand, so we're going to buy the property from the ROE, transfer them $100,000, and then we're going to sell it?
No.
We're going to own it, and then you're going to?
We're going to own it. We're going to utilize it during the construction of the jail.
Right.
And then we're going to analyze the building and either remove it, demolish it and remove it from the site, or repurpose it. But this is the first step of that overall process of eliminating the office space.
Okay, so after I understood the jail, for the jail renovation, of using that to process the, you know, during that time. But so we're still a little bit unsure whether it's going to be repurposed or demolished.
There's a difference of opinion, and I'm not totally sold that that's the best thing to do yet, but I'm also not convinced that it's not the best thing to do as far as taking it down. There's a lot of investigation as to far as what this building could be used for. It could be used for long-term storage if there's a need for storage. But if there's not a need for storage, you know, the best thing to do is take it down.
And I think, Rob, what you said was sensible, was that after you get everything out of this building, you'll have a clean look at it.
A much better look at it. But first glance, it has HVAC issues. It has electrical issues. It has structural issues. You know, It is not a building that needs to be used as an office space.
And then one final question. And then how does this affect? We authorized, was it $200,000 as part of the budget?
There's another $100,000 if we wanted to go forward, and, you know, whether it would be a demolition or, you know.
Right, so that 100 will just come from that 200.
Yeah, yeah. So it was kind of to complete the project. Depending on if we find value in using that building for the jail project, we may determine that we just needs to be raised.
Correct.
Madam Chairman, I'm in accord with what Mr. McCray says. However, I'm feeling that this issue raises a wider issue of total property use. And during the Finance Committee meetings on the budget, I have been respectfully requesting that the board members work with the administration to come up with an overarching vision for how we are going to use our properties. I feel that this is an important finance issue, as that some of the properties were tentatively slated for improvements that were expensive, which seemed to me to be not the best planning if we intend to divest ourselves of those properties. And so, again, I'm respectfully, tactfully, and humbly calling upon the administration to work with the Buildings Committee and Finance, as I don't think it's completely just a building issue, to come up with a comprehensive plan for property use. I noted that yesterday, for example, yesterday the Clay Street property was in the Building Committee, and I don't think that the Finance Committee, who is in part touched by that issue, was informed. And I'm not saying anybody did anything bad. It isn't the best way of communicating and keeping us all on board. That's all I'm saying.
I was just curious, who or what budget originally paid for this property, and what budget was maintaining it over the years? Was it county budget or the Department of Education?
I can answer that. Okay. The Regional Office of Education purchased the property in 1996, and we purchased it for $251,145. We put an additional $46,617 into the building, which gave the property a value of right at $300,000. And we maintained and paid all bills at the property for as long as we occupied them. And everyone that worked there was a grant employee through the state of Illinois. Essentially, I had also shared with Finance yesterday, we made annual payments to the county because the county had fronted the money on this. We paid the county $24,000 a year to pay the building off. I didn't make the purchase of the building. I inherited the debt when I came into office in 2007. Also inherited the maintenance of the building. I also am the guy that cooperated when emergency management and the sheriff's office needed to expand because of just being a county partner of them using the property. And so what was shared here that, you know, the county's already encroached upon, you know what I mean, the boundary lines. So if when you go to if this was to be resold, it couldn't be sold on the plot that is currently, you know what I mean, recorded, because the county's already utilizing part of the property. But to answer your question, the property was zero cost to the county. It's been zero cost because we paid, just as we paid for a Freeman School, we paid the building off. It was a loan given to the regional office. The money was fronted, and then we essentially paid it off, and we upkept all the maintenance on it. And, by the way, I will tell you this. That building was bought in really good times. It was when there was a lot of state money coming to the regional office. In fact, when I came into office, we had 16 people working in that building. It was that much state and federal money that was flowing. And what happened with all the federal cutbacks in all the education programs and all the cutbacks in the state, in 2010, I laid off 19 people. So, and most of it was at the Clay Street Center, just because of loss of funds.
All right. I thank you for all that detail, but you definitely answered my question about the budget.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And then, Dr. Diver, as the agreement is written, you're okay that the money, as it reads in here, that some of the money will go to the Freeman School to start some repairs out there?
We would like the money just, you know, transferred to the regional office, put in our enterprise fund, so because we don't know. I mean, as we need repairs there, we would like to be able to move forward with making some of them.
And then just for the good of the order, with regard to Freeman School, it's my understanding that the Regional Office of Education can't formally own property. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And so we are kind of the county is a caretaker. It holds the deed to the property for Freeman School, but all the maintenance and the ongoing repairs, and that's the responsibility of the ROE, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. I just want to make sure that we're aware of that going forward, because we did, I guess, erroneously have that budgeted for almost $500,000 in repairs, tuck pointing, and roofing. And Dr. Diver was gracious in accommodating or correcting that situation, but I think for all the county board members should be aware that is the relationship that we have, is that we have ownership, we have the deed to that property, but the ongoing maintenance to the Freeman School comes out of the ROE budget, because it's not a core mission of the county to have an alternative school. Yes.
Here's something, Tom, that I have, you know, in discussing this with Rob and Doug, is that, you know, we paid the county $35,000 a year. We were paying them that for paying the building off.
Right.
Okay. So what I've proposed, you know, let's say, and the issue there currently is the roof. Okay. And I've got a bid. I just did a bid 2 weeks ago to get emergency repairs on the roof so we don't have interior damage. But if we decide to do something major, like put a roof on, let's say it costs $200,000, we would pay that off in a 7-year period of time back to the county, you know, at $35,000 or $40,000 a year. If the county would, let's say front the money for a major repair, we don't have a problem of entering a maintenance agreement for 5 years. Let's just say it's a 5-year maintenance agreement. Which you do a major repair, we pay it off in a set number of years. Or you say, well, 5 years is too long. Can you pay it off in 3 years? You know, because our revenue that comes in is difficult to maybe substantiate big dollar repairs immediately. Otherwise, we're going to have to go out. If we can't do it through the county as we've done in the past, we then would have to go out to a private loan company.
What I would suggest doing is just having a capital improvement fund that you put that same money that you'd be paying for rent into that, because the count, I think we own more than 20 buildings, and the challenge is all of them need new roofs. And the tuck pointing alone, I believe, on the Freeman School was about $300,000, and the roof was over $200,000. And so with all due respect, I just think that the challenge that we would have, we have a lot of challenges, I mean, with buildings. And so I would rather see you do something like that in the county and really not be involved. That's just my personal opinion, with all due respect. And I'd rather have that relationship that you paid a dollar a year in rent, and that with the understanding that that all the maintenance and the ongoing repairs would be the, you know, from the ROE. That's just my personal opinion.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
I find this discussion most heartening between Mr. Diver and Mr. McRae, because during the budgeting process, I was one of those finance committee members that pointed to the fact that over $400,000 of repair should not be borne by the county, but according to previous agreement, as I understood it, was the responsibility of Mr. Diver's office. So I'm glad to hear this discussion going on and talking about creative financing and to ensure that everybody's wearing the right hat and paying the right bills. So I want to thank them both very much for apparently doing their homework and being ready to have this discussion today.
Well, and the other thing, too, I want to clarify my comments from earlier. I really am in favor of us getting out of having fewer buildings rather than more. I think this is an opportunity to buy the Clay Street property. It's a unique opportunity, a window of opportunity that we should probably take advantage of, but I would lean toward tearing it down, but that's just my opinion at this point in time. As far as storage goes, the Wood River Township Hospital facility, the Wood River Township that there's it seems to me gobs of storage there, but you know, that's something we can, that's a bridge we can cross at another time, but but I am supportive of the purchase of the Clay Street property.
And I think for finance and working together with buildings and facilities that, you know, this discussion is more in depth, and I haven't been abreast or on top of every bit of the building issues going on. We were dealing with the budget and that, and I look forward to getting with your committees and learning more about what we want to do with the buildings in the future. I think this opportunity right now sets well with the county yeah. use, and then to have a comprehensive plan as to the financing of how the Regional Office of Education does building repairs. I don't know if I'm ready to determine that at this point. That would be further discussions on how that matter is handled. I like your suggestions.
Well, I mean, here's the problem that we have probably put, just since I've been on the county board, I would say we put, which is 6 years, almost 7 years now, we probably put close to $3 million into the Wood River Township facility. That's just one building.
That's right.
And there's challenges there that we're aware of now. And that's just one building.
Correct.
And so and that's why I'm reluctant to get into any relationship with someone saying we're going to maintain their building for X amount of dollars, whether it's $35,000 a year or $300,000 a year, because, you know, you never know when you're going to have an asbestos situation that can be extremely expensive. Roofs, HVAC systems. You know, any relationship other than that, I think, would be something I would lobby against, other than, you know, I'm willing to do this one. I wouldn't do any more.
I agree. I think there just needs to be further discussion on owning yep. properties and that, and getting a better understanding.
Yep.
And I agree with all your opinions on that I don't want to own any more property than we need to, because the maintenance on buildings is far right. exceeds.
Yeah, and nobody has a crystal ball, and it's just,
All right. Any other discussions on any of the other resolutions? Any questions or anything of that nature? If not, can I have a motion to approve the purchasing resolution?
So moved.
Second.
And roll call, Larry?
Yes.
Yes. Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Moving on for claims and transfer reports.
Yes, Madam Chairman, I have for your observance claims and transfers report for November 2017. Continue?
Yes, please.
We have no motel tax reconciliation report for this month. As you see on your agenda, we have four immediate emergency appropriations. The Illinois Criminal Justice Information Authority has authorized an award of federal Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Association grant to the state's attorney in the amount of $84,381. This is a no-match grant. And I'll continue forward with the other grants.
Yes.
Okay, the Illinois Emergency Management Agency has authorized Federal Department of Homeland Security funds of $61,109 to be awarded to the county's EMA. And this grant agreement requires a 50% match by the county, totaling $61,109. So that's another grant. The next one, the immediate emergency, whereas subsequent to the adoption of said budget, the county has received a grant in the amount of $15,000 titled to the South Representative Litigant Coordinator Program. And this is with the purpose of expanding the self-help legal center at Madison County. This is a no-match grant for $15,000. And the final one is, again, subsequent to the adoption of the budget, the County Child Advocacy Center has received a grant from the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services for the purpose of providing continued funding for the administrative costs of the Child Advocacy Center. It's for $132,572, and the county, it's a no-match grant also, and I move for your approval on those grants.
Okay. one question on the EMA grant that's a match. How is that handled? Is the $61,000 coming out of their portion of the budget?
Sorry, where does it come out of?
Their EMA admin. They match it from there.
Is that a general revenue fund? So then, if we were balanced going in, but now we're going to spend $122,000 and only get $61,000 back, aren't we technically out of balance then by $61,000? Oh, so that was actually budgeted.
Yeah.
Oh. Cheers. Good planning.
May I have a motion to approve the claims and transfers reports and the four immediate emergency appropriations?
Madam Chairman, I move we approve the claims and transfer reports and the four emergency appropriations.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Moving on, amazing again, to budget, the monthly budget report.
You guys have monthly budget reports.
Any questions?
I have a couple here, Madam Chair. I'm just looking at the first page on the budget analysis. I'm looking at holiday pay. It looks like we only budgeted $91,000, and we're $1.1 million in the red on this. Is that have we mis-budgeted for that line item? I was curious why. You seem like holiday pay be pretty much you kind of a known within reason to be that much off. I'm just wondering why it's so far off.
Best practice in budgeting that salary for all budgeted in the regular pay line.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
When the budget was set for 2017, most of the departments just budgeted their full salaries in the regular pay line. They didn't split it between the regular pay, sick pay, holiday pay, vacation pay.
Is that going to be the same thing for 2018, or is it going to be budgeted?
Yeah.
Right now, yeah.
Madam Chairman, this was an issue that I had during the budgeting process that I did not feel that the way that we were reporting costs was accurate. And I asked that we try to change this. I don't know how to change it, but I think that my colleague, Mr. Moore's observation is totally in keeping with the problem of the way that we have this written into the budget. It doesn't show what we're really doing, and it's misleading, I think, but correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not seeing it. But that seems like a rather giant disparity to me that Mr. Moore is pointing out. Maybe there's something I don't understand.
I have two more questions, if I could.
Of course.
On the facilities management utilities, I noticed it's a $700,000 budget, and as of this point, we're 11/12 through the year, and we have $159,000 left, which is about, I'm not sure what the percentage is, but it's probably three or four times the much that I would think we should have at this point in time. Are you expected to spend that $159,000 in the last month of the year? All right, very good. And my last question, or observation really, on the total budget for the county, I'm looking at $139 million. Right now we have $38 million left, which is about 25% of our budget. That's a lot of money. Is that going to be rolled over somehow? Do you think we might be spending a lot of that?
As far as reappropriations go, the departments have been in the process of turning in requests for amounts that they need to carry over based on projects that they have in the works. The amount of budgets that's in grants that crosses fiscal years, they're set to automatically carry over. Most grants are either a July 1 or a October 1st fiscal year, so those will carry over.
Okay. To me, I mean, carry over, there is a amount of carryover that's necessary, but this seems excessive to me. I mentioned this before. Also, another reason why I mentioned after our budget meetings that we need to have a mid-year review, because I believe that we can tighten up our budgets and should tighten up our budgets line by line. If there's excessive amount of money that's left that looks like it may not be spent, pull it back and put it somewhere where it can be used, or if there's a deficit, then we'll plus up that line. But to me, the way till we get to the end of the year and have just a lot of money left over sitting there to roll over, I just believe, and I don't mean to be overly negative, but it could be managed better, I believe. Thank you.
Madam Chairman, go back on Mr. Moore's, my colleague's first point is the reason that I'm adamant that perhaps we should note these budgetings differently is because specifically during the budgeting process when we're looking at the Sheriff's Department, which is so important for us for public safety, it looked like, oh, well, we're paying everybody regular time here. And then when we got into busting out the figures, then we found out why we actually had the need to add four jailers and another deputy. It's because the budget figures didn't show that they were shy on people. The budget figures made it look like we were paying everybody regular time. It wasn't even accurate. And we should, in my humble opinion, again, maybe I'm not understanding everything. I'm saying this humbly. We caught that mistake, and now we haven't changed it. It's the same this month. I don't understand that, and I don't want to cast aspersions against the auditor's office because I think they do a great job. But that's something to me, Rick, we need to think about changing.
Well, wait a minute. Respectfully. The auditor's office wasn't the one that put this budget together. We assisted with the budget, and I think there were people that did a good job with this budget. But I don't know if that's the auditor's office's problem with the budget. It's the construction of the budget. The people were involved in the budget. And, you know, if it's a situation, I like Mr. Moore's idea about taking a mid-year look at the budget to see where we're at. And if we've got something we need to correct, then by all means, Phil, I think we should correct it.
Well, Rick, if the responsibility is ours, then I think we need to step up and change the way that we report these figures so we have a realistic view of how the money's really being spent.
Well, how the money's being spent is realistically calculated and being reported there, because you're seeing the actual expenditures broken out by regular pay, overtime pay, sick pay, holiday pay. It's the budget portion that you're saying that you're not seeing the salaries budgeted by those lines.
So I guess what we're saying is we need a collaborative effort here.
Yes.
Yes.
Please.
Yeah, and I think with Rick and Jennifer, I think we're doing that. Having the tools to do that is important. The HR information system and their budget figures. That's something we have to move towards. You know, that we have a long history of doing it the other way and getting a little more detailed. And I think with this last budget, to Don's point, is we have tightened it up. And due to different fiscal years with the state and the feds, there is going to be carryover. And also decisions to spend do cross over fiscal lines. But I do agree with you, and that was one of our complaints in the past, is, you know, some of our budgets in the past had big pads. And I think we've reduced that in this next upcoming budget, the one we're currently in. But I do agree that working with Jennifer, I think we can provide some better forecasting, especially as we go into the 19 budget.
Thank you, Mr. Hume.
Do you have anything to add?
One thing I would just add about the report is we're still showing that the general fund will be under budget by about $1.9 million. And I guess we'll know at the next meeting, right? Because
yeah,
this is for this is the October end, so then we'll have the full year end.
That number fluctuates,
right?
So we'll have a better idea.
We're still looking pretty good. We budgeted $47.7 million. We spent $39.3 million with 1 month to go. So we should be under. So I assume, unfortunately, I won't be able to be here for January's meeting. But I assume, you know, there's always a tendency then to say we have this extra money. Let's start handing it out. But just remember, we had to pay $3.5 million to catch up on the pension contribution for SLEP, right? And then we have another maybe $500,000 that we have to pay. So we're really not just having this $1.9 million to hand out. So I would really caution the committee when in January, when I'm not here, to be smart about that.
And to keep in mind, payments from the state. I talked to a guy yesterday who says he owns property that he rents in the state. He's 5 months behind. So you have to take that into account, too. And that's not one of our guys. This was somebody that is a private entity that rents to the state. And if I don't know how many months we're behind. Are we behind with the state?
I mean, income tax and sales tax are on their regular 3 month lag, but other salary reimbursements, I mean, we've received through, I think, February of 2017.
So, I mean, that you have to take that into consideration, too, is that we have to have funds to, you know, supplant that if they don't send money on. They haven't been, so they're broke. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, rainy day funds or whatever you want to call them are necessary in our situation and the operation of the county. So that's another consideration. But I think we need a more collaborative effort from anybody. And I think that the Finance Committee did a good job with that during the budget. I know Lisa and our office, well, everybody, if anybody had a question, anybody's ever got a question, you come up and ask us. We'll be more than happy to explain it to you or, you know, but I thought there was a good give and take between the auditor's office and the finance committee during the budget process. So and I look forward to that continuing. I've shared those accolades about the finance committee a number of times publicly. So I think if somebody wants to take a look and say, this is how government should work, they look at our relationship and what's went on here. So we're at.
Well, and if everyone doesn't mind, I know there's some issues with the, I do believe that's the ECHO plan. It kind of ties in right now since we technically have an excess budget of 1.9, but probably not really, that if you don't mind moving that discussion up about the ECHO plan and possibly hearing what Chris has to say about it, if that's okay with everyone.
Sure. I know last month we had a little bit of a difference on what we thought we actually owed or needed to be paid by the end of the year. So I worked with Craig Edwards and Jennifer and I spoke and Rick as well. And it looks like our balance, our ending balance, is projected at $537,921.76. That's our deficit for the ECHO that needs to be paid in the reserve account. If we don't pay that by December 31st, then we will incur about $40,000 in interest because they're going to charge us 7.5%. Now, if we pay this and then the investment, we're going to have some gains, I would say, this year. This was a pretty good year in the market. And so we may end up overpaying a little bit, but anything that sits in that account that's a positive balance will receive 7.5% interest on that account. So that's not a bad thing either. So.
Go ahead, Phil. Yes, following along Treasurer Slusser's point here about the investment, you know, we're in a rosy time on these investments. And I've seen the market go from high to low in a day twice in my lifetime. And I'm not saying that's going to happen. But while we've got money on the table and we're getting good returns, it would seem to me that those bills that we are able to pay, and correct me if I'm wrong, we should be taking that money off the table and paying off our bills and utilize the money we make to reduce our debt. I mean, that's just a general thought I have, and I'm hoping that we're able to do that through the treasurer's office on as many of these sorts of items as we can.
Yeah, I mean, we've paid $1.4 million in interest on this account over the last 11 years, so I think it would be wise if we do have the money to go, and we do, to go ahead and pay it. We'd be able to pull it, since we're in the 2018 fiscal year, my discussions with Jennifer, we would be able to pull it out of the 2018 budget, but it would create a shortfall going forward for the 2018 IMRF fund. And so we would need to, your committee would need to reappropriate 2017 money that was left over to make up for that shortfall. But that would all be in the IMRF. We shouldn't have to pull, if I'm not mistaken, Rick, we shouldn't have to pull anything out of the general fund to do that. So.
No. I got a question, though. Is that ECHO payment, is that reoccurring or would this finish us with Echo as far as
no,
the
pay? No, because we'll still have an annual contribution. Like this year, our employer contribution was $109,185. And if there are losses in investments, then we'll owe money again. We'll owe our annual contribution, if I'm not mistaken, Craig, right? And then if there are losses in investment, we'll have to make up those shortfalls as well.
And I have, so again, years ago, we sunk another,
$4 million.
$4 million.
That was in 2012.
Into the Echo plan.
Yeah.
I understand I don't want to pay $40,000 in interest. My concern is, if I remember from the budget going forward, that we decrease some of the amount of money going into the IMRF and being collected. If I do $500,000 now, next year am I going to have to do the same amount? And I mean, is there any foreseeable way to see how this is going to work out?
No, because it's all based on investment losses, really. If we can't control what the market does, and so we could end up owing more. Now, we had a balance going for 3 years on this, and that's why it kind of built up. And then we had some significant investment losses in 2015 and some small losses in 2016. 2017, we should have some, I would hope, some big gains. So, there's no way to really predict it just based on the investments. But they do give us our target employer contribution every year to pay, and then we have to make up the difference at the end of the year. So if there is a shortfall. And there have been years where there was not a shortfall. If you look at 2013, we had an ending balance of $51,000 in the positive. But if you look at that spreadsheet that I sent, but that's the only time in the last 11 years that we had a surplus balance. So.
You know, if I could, Lisa.
Yes.
I think that there's two points here. One, like Chris is saying, it's dependent upon the market. We've had a heck of a year with the market, but at some point it has to adjust. There has to be an adjustment there. I don't know what it is, but it's got to be coming pretty quick. We've had a heck of a year there with the market, and with the Echo, I guess the only way we eliminate that is when we don't have anybody in Echo, and that's probably going to be wild. How many participants do we have in Echo?
There's just a handful left, and there are a few that are likely to ever even collect benefits. So it's really, you know, we still have another potential liability in the long run of $993,000, but that's a kind of worst case, or I'm sorry, $964,904. Over the long run. That would be over who knows how many years. I mean, some of these folks aren't eligible to collect it for many, many years down the road. Or they maybe just had a year or two of service, 5 years?
Five.
Oh, there are five still left in that would be eligible to collect benefits. So
the Echo plan should be a poster child for all the things that can go bad within people being able to vote their own salaries and pensions. It's, in my opinion, Echo was probably the biggest ripoff perpetrated on the taxpayers that in recent history. We have people that are actually drawing an Echo pension and drawing a salary. That should be job one. Yeah, it's borderline criminal, I think. But number two, I realize the market has improved, but the investments that I think that are available to the treasurer. Really aren't, you know, we're not investing in the stock market. We have limited opportunities to invest mostly in bonds and things like that. And so there, I think to get a 7% return, I mean, that would be something that would be, you know, probably out of reach for,
absolutely,
you know, a reasonable investment. So I commend the treasurer on bringing this to our attention. And it seems to me to be a no-brainer. The other thing, too, I appreciate the treasurer because – when we paid off the, I believe it was the SLEP money that we just put over $3 million in. That, again, was about a 7%, was it not, Mr. Treasurer?
Yeah, that was going to be 7.5% interest.
7.5% penalty. And so without him, I think that I have to give he and the other folks that brought that to our attention kudos, because That was an incredible 7.5% of over $3 million. You know, that pays his salary and probably a few more people in that office right there.
I don't want to take you back what Tom said. I think the Echo deal wasn't a good deal for taxpayers. However, I'm gonna commend IMRF as a model retirement system. I mean, when you look at it, it's funded to a 95% level. They're doing something right. And maybe it's something that the state and the feds and everybody else ought to look at. And it's reasonable when you look at it. And that's why it's solvent and in excellent shape at 95%. And I also want to commend Chris on his efforts. And he works well with our office. If we've got questions, neither one of us have a problem picking the phone up and saying, hey, what about this? What about that? And he's been very easy to work with. And I think his investment portfolio shows that and what he's been able to accomplish. And I commend him for that.
Thanks. Yeah, and I also want to say when Craig took over as the IMRF administrator back about a year ago maybe or January, he's done a really good job of staying on top of this and putting these spreadsheets together and getting us the information that we need. So good job, Craig.
Good at looking at retirement systems.
And I would also, I just want to say, thank you, Craig. I didn't want to mention you by name because I didn't know if you wanted to be mentioned by name, but I really do appreciate you, you know.
But everybody else did.
Yeah, and I hope we have a culture that people do feel like Craig and others feel like they can bring these issues up and say, hey, I think you ought to be looking at this. And because, as county board members, we don't know what we don't know. And there's the way that we learn is from the folks who are doing the day-to-day jobs here, and I would like for people to feel like they can come to us in confidence or say, hey, you should be looking at this and that this is a no-brainer. And thank you, Craig, for doing that because for the treasurer for implementing it, because I think I would guess this is what about $300,000 just in interest that we have saved this year, right? 7% of $3 million, and
yes.
Right, and then here's another $40,000, so maybe even $400,000. So that's because of people that brought this issue forward. Otherwise, we'd have been paying these penalties, perhaps.
But I guess, and I agree. Great. I just want to, since we did decrease some of the amount of money being collected for next year in 2018, I guess I'd like someone to start doing the math or trying to figure out, are we going to be in the hole again next year, and how do we compensate for that also? Jennifer, do you?
I mean,
are we within our
limits? The 2018 budget was prepared not accounting for this payment, but there is sufficient budget remaining in 2017 that it could be reappropriated to 2018 to cover this payment. And since that was unspent in 2017, there's sufficient fund balance to cover making the payment and keep us at the six-month reserve level so that the IMRF fund will be in the black until the next tax disbursements are made in 2018. So I don't see it being a problem for the IMRF fund with no additional transfer from the general fund.
Right. Now, there are a couple factors that could change that at this time next year. If someone else that's eligible to collect would start collecting, then, because you can look at that spreadsheet that I sent you in 2009, 2010, 13, and 14, that second to last column that says adjustments and annuities, you can see whenever we had to dump more money in because a retiree that was going to get a large ECHO pension, those adjustments had to be made. And then in 2015, we got some money back from a pension that got taken away. So that's how those adjustments were working, basically. So there could be an adjustment there. It's hard to predict. It doesn't look like anybody's going to be collecting next year. We'll start collecting next year. And then with investment gains this year, we should end up with a positive balance after we pay this. So
as far as mechanically, Jennifer, do we need to have another meeting, or can we do this in January?
I mean,
no. It has to be done.
The the treasurer could go ahead and make the disbursement to pay the funds in December, which would stop us from being charged the interest.
Okay.
But in January, at the January meeting, when we put all the reappropriations through, we would need to address that at the January meeting.
Okay.
Do we question, Madam Chairman, a parliamentary procedure? Do we have need a motion for our treasurer to do this? Because I'd be happy to make a motion for us to pay this off. But if we don't, then
I don't think so. I think the only it would be just next month. There would just be the resolution.
Move it up.
Yeah.
And technically speaking, so that is going to go through the general fund. It's not an intergovernmental transfer.
No.
No. It goes through the IMRF fund.
The IMRF fund.
But SLEP was an intergovernmental transfer, right?
That's because there was a big shortfall.
Yes, okay. SLEP, there wasn't sufficient fund balance in the IMRF fund to cover that large of a payment, so the decision was made to transfer general fund money to the IMRF fund to help
Right, and in 2012, we had to pull $4 million out of the general fund to transfer over that time. Since it was so large, this one's a little smaller, so there's not the need.
Thank you.
So just so the rest of the team, we're aware that in January we will have to reappropriate $500,000 into the IMR, or from 2017 into 2018. Reappropriate.
Well, it'll be whatever the remaining balance is of the 2017 IMRF fund, which I don't have that number at this time yet.
Okay, and then we're all happy. Move on to safety and risk management reports.
Good morning. I just have two items for you this morning. The first one is our quarterly report for the payments above $5,000. So you should have a copy of that in front of you if there's any questions. And then the second item is the open liability claims report for the last quarter. We presently have 35 open professional liability claims. Six of those are scheduled to be closed. We were just waiting for final legal bills to come in and get those processed and confirm that everything's been paid to date before we could close those. We have 8 open general liability claims. 5 of those were closed in the last quarter. We have 10 open auto liability claims, and 6 of those were closed in the last quarter. Our total reserves for open claims is currently at $1,012,293.98. Any questions?
Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Tom. Just had a question about the report. Is there somebody within the county that has got horsepower that manages this report? To look at these cases, and I know these cases are, and a lot of times are complex and not going to happen overnight to be resolved. But I guess my point is, I'm wondering if somebody is actively working this report, because I'm looking at the quarterly expenditure here is over $100,000 of these cases that are still open, and obviously if we can close something quicker, it's not going to cost us any legal fees. So I guess. Who is the person that manages this and sees and checks and makes sure these things are moving along?
That's my office. We're self-administered. We have a third-party administrator that sets the reserves and tracks our payments, but we manage the claims ourselves as self-administering the claims. We are self-funded. Many of the professional liability claims are currently in litigation with the courts, variety of different reasons, whether they're on appeal or they're currently waiting for motion for summary judgment to be ruled upon, or we're in early discovery stages. There are various levels depending upon when litigation was first filed and what's transpired during the course of the case. With the general liability claims, we did have a significant number of we had a significant number of sewer backup claims earlier in the year that did cost us quite a bit of money. That one expenditure for the $28,900.10 back in September that was approved by resolution, that payment was then made after that was approved. That was from a sewer backup claim to a homeowner down in the special service area, a homeowner down there. So That explains some of those expenditures there, that large amount. The other ones, like I said, are for legal fees for various claims that are pending with the court system.
But what I'm trying to get at is, how do you know these claims are being worked? I mean, could it just be sitting there for a month and nobody's really picked up on it? Is there somebody asking that question? Do you just receive information to get updates from somebody, or do you actively go out and say, what's the status of this case?
It's
been pending for 2 or 3 years, and do you really know it's being actively worked?
Yes, they are actively being monitored, and I review all the legal bills on all the professional liability claims. Those actually come right across my desk. I communicate with our attorneys on the cases to get updates, but a lot of that is in terms of what transpires with the court is a lot of it is out of our control in terms of how, you know, things are set. We can wait months for a ruling to be made on a motion for summary judgment.
Don, if I may, I think, you know, the state's attorney is a part of this as well, as far as our legal representation and where things are and how things get paid and by there's a lot of decisions that are in that with him. And I think maybe having the discussion with the Finance Committee and the state's attorney and Annette and myself and to get everybody up to speed and make sure that everyone feels comfortable about where things are. I think that would be a very good idea.
I agree. I think I'd like to get a warm and fuzzy feeling that these cases are being looked at and not just sitting there on a shelf because people are overworked, which we know is the case.
Yeah, I think there are some decisions we get to make. There are a lot of decisions we don't, and they're a part of that. And so to have them in this conversation would be really important.
I think that's a great idea. I'd like to be part of that.
If we're going to delve into any of the details about individual cases, we'd actually have to go into executive session as well.
I couldn't hear that last comment. Pardon me.
I said if we were going to delve into any of the details about individual cases, we would need to go into executive session.
Thank you.
Hey, Lisa.
Thank you, Annette.
Sure.
Ms. Shampoo. Yeah, I appreciate Mr. Moore bringing this up. I know what he's saying. It's easy for the lawyers to sort of kick the can down the road because they're getting paid, and they have an incentive to make them go on longer. And so I think it's a lot of times in government that, you know, and I think Annette does a great job. But I do think it's good to say, hey, is there some sense of urgency to get these things settled, because we are working against the other party that has an incentive to keep it going at times, seemingly. But my question for Annette is on the legal fees. You know, some of these are, one is $13,000, $14,000. Is there a reason why we're not saying who the legal fees are paid to? Which lawyer? Can we get that? I'm just curious as to who we're paying.
If you match up the claim number on the liability log in that last column, it will list the status. That name that's behind there is actually the assigned lead attorney on the case.
Okay.
I can change that if you'd like to show the law firm or something.
I thought you were going to say that, and I was just sitting here. It just popped into my head, and I thought that's what you were going to say, that I could probably match that up. And so,
I mean, if you'd like for us to do something different with the quarterly report for the, you know, payments made, we can add that there.
Well, I mean, like the top sheet here, I think it would just be interesting not to have to go that next step.
Right.
If you could just create another column and just put the attorney
absolutely.
In there, if that's okay.
I mean, it's,
not a problem. We can do that for the next
one. Would it be all right for the committee that maybe next month that we can organize with Tom Gibbons to go over our legal fees and where cases are? I do know that there are questions that probably the Finance Committee would want to ask and be aware of. We do a lot of outsourcing of legal fees to outside vendors, where in some counties that's provided by the state's attorney through attorneys that are paid by the county. And I think we're at $185 an hour with a lot of our outside legal work. And, you know, in my staff, the question is, you know, are we required to go, do we have to go to these outside attorneys to get our information? Many counties, you know, just ask the state's attorney. In fact, in the statute, number 7 of the state's attorney is to provide at no cost or no fee advice to county officials. County officials would be anybody that's appointed, elected. That'd be a net at no cost. But we get invoices. And so that's a real good question because it's a considerable amount of money. And I don't necessarily know if that's quite the maybe you want to look at it exactly how that's shaped.
Yeah, I did want to say, too, to piggyback on a little bit of this, I know one of the cases that I've had to be involved in negotiations, we do try to do those as efficiently as possible because I'm always aware of the legal fees and who's on the clock there. And I know Annette is in every one of those meetings, and she's the one that usually has all the information and the documentation and kind of keeps us on track. And then we also try to do some of these over email, too, to avoid, you know, the long meetings where we all have to get together. So as far as what I've seen is we are, on our side, I know we are actively managing these and staying on top of them. I can't always say the same for the opposing counsel. Sometimes they like to really drag things out, and it makes it take, you know, that's out of our control. But I can say from my perspective, we've stayed on top of the case that I've been involved with consistently. So.
Yes, thank you.
And would that be the pleasure of the committee to maybe convene next month to get a little bit more detail on some of the legal cases? Is that something that you all would like some info on?
Sure.
Is there any way that you...
Yeah, we can provide the summary of some of them. It would. Do you want individual attorneys to appear, or do you want just a general overview?
You know, I think we need a breakdown on legal fees, pay it out of the tort fund, and then also out of other departments and grants, and how those are invoiced. And I would suggest the real question is what can we do to bring a lot of that in-house? You know, since I've been here, there's been one person doing civil work. It was John McGuire. Now it's David Ezra. And with all the civil questions we have, which often go off-site, you know, maybe there's a way to save money here. Well, right now in other counties, if you'd had a civil question, you could call the state's attorney and get an opinion. It'd be free, or it would basically be the cost of the labor of that person who's already there. Currently, when we have a legal question, we get billed at $185 an hour. So.
I have legal questions, though, and I just called Jeff Ezra.
Yeah, they direct us to, for instance, in labor issues, they direct us to John Gilbert at Sandberg Phoenix.
Oh, for labor, okay. I just mean for my own, as a county board member, I don't see a lot of that, but whenever I have a...
Yeah, so that's where district. Traditionally it's gone, and that's where the state's attorney's directed us. It's to outside legal counsel.
For labor. I guess just from my perspective, I mean, I was just meeting with Jeff Ezra yesterday for about an hour about an issue.
Yeah, anytime, Madam Chairman, anytime I've got a question, I call Jeff Ezra. There's not our Tom, and there's no charge for anything like that. Maybe the better discussion point here would be to have Tom in the room.
That's what I'm suggesting. I think we probably need to do that.
You know, so that we can...
And I'd just say, just for the record, I would encourage not to invite any outside attorneys.
So,
yeah.
Okay. That's fine. I just wanted to
please don't. Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify that I would prefer not to spend the money, but I just want to be adequately prepared and have the appropriate people here to be able to answer questions.
You're very conscientious.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can do that.
Many,
like the general liability claims, the sewer backup claims, we oftentimes haven't required legal counsel, and we always utilize in-house through the state's attorney's office. Generally, it's been Jeff Ezra. In the past, it was John McGuire. If we do have legal questions on those things, if there was a lawsuit filed, then they would make the determination whether to keep it in-house or to refer it outside for more specialized legal assistance. There, I'm currently working with Jeff Ezra on a case right now that is involving a sewer backup that we've been communicating for actually probably almost a year now in the case. Unfortunately, we're kind of dealing with a plaintiff attorney that's not very actively managing the claim. And there's a number of outstanding issues that I think that need to be resolved before we make any decisions on how to properly resolve it. You know, we have kind of some ways that we've handled these cases in the past, and we don't want to necessarily divert from those things to then expose us to much larger liability in a future case. So we kind of have to evaluate them on a case-by-case basis. I do have authority up to $19,999.99 before I come for approval before the Finance Committee and the County Board. I'd like to say I could use that more, but sometimes I can't. It's generally above that. So, but, you know, the auto claims, you aren't going to see us coming to you generally with those because they are under that, you know, under our payment authority amount. So, and we do generally don't have attorneys involved in those unless there's been a lawsuit filed by a third party.
Do we need a motion for the...
No.
To accept the report?
Yeah.
I make the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any new business?
Yes, Madam Chairman. As Chairman of the Tax Cycle Committee, I want to draw to the Finance Committee's attention something that is coming up onto us on the horizon here, which involves potentially a considerable amount of money on the county's part to pay for. In the Tax Cycle Committee last month, we discovered that due to a resolution passed by the Tax Cycle Committee in 2008 that the township, that the county in effect subsidizes some of the assessment in various townships across the county, but not all of them. And I have this chart that I like to put into the record for our members to peruse. But in 2013, we assumed a cost of over $82,000 to conduct assessments in the county. In 2014, $121,400 and some dollars. In 2015, $37,546. And in 2016, $20,467. These charges are not equal across various townships, as some of them do their complete assessment work, whereas others do not. For example, we had in Godfrey Township in 2014, and we picked up the tab for $75,654.06 of assessing services, whereas during the same period of time, others had zero. The committee has determined through discussion that we think that the current system is not fair to all the townships, as some basically subsume two costs, the assessment for their own township and in part the partial cost for assessing other townships. I must alert the committee that the Finance Committee that we're looking at changing this. And even more importantly, as we look to the March elections, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Alton has a referendum to totally dissolve their township. Is that correct?
No, I don't think so. I think they're considering that.
Okay. Well, I will simply point out to the committee and to our other elected officials, should that occur, that due to state laws or the Illinois statutes that covers assessments, we would have to, under current conditions, assume that entire cost. And in conversation with Mr. Dauterman, the chief assessor, that could be $500,000 in costs to the county that we had not budgeted for. And in addition, That would mean that we would probably have to hire 4 to 5 new personnel in the county assessor's office just to pick up Alton. I will point out to my colleagues that if one township totally divests itself of responsibility for paying for its assessments, all may be tempted to do that. And by state statute, as it stands now, we would have to assume those costs. And so I must alert the committee that on the tax cycle committee, we are looking at various alternatives to ensure fair payment for assessment services moving forward. I would like to provide this for your...
And I would just like to add to what Phil's saying. Just the Alton situation, I think, is a little more unique in the sense that the township assessor has decided not to go with our countywide system of assessing. And so if the county would pick it up, they would have to be building it up from the ground floor. And so that $500,000 figure is a figure that would need to be absorbed over 4 years and to cover the whole township. A similar-sized township, say Edwardsville, they're already in the system and so forth. The cost would be much less.
But Doug, what he's bringing up a very good point. Apparently, we've already picked up the tab for Godfrey.
Oh, I agree with that, sure.
Okay, yeah. So Godfrey is considering eliminating township government, right? We know that it's on the consideration for Alton. He's bringing up, because some of these assessment, they have 7 or 8 employees just in the assessor's office. So if Wood River Township has, Robert, what, 7 or 8, right, FTEs, just in the assessor's office. If that goes away and there's nobody doing the assessments, that does come to the county. And so I think he's bringing up a good point that we need to look forward. If townships, Godfrey is coterminous, Alton is coterminous, you know, they overlap completely with the village of Godfrey and the city of Alton. And so that may make some sense, right, that they would eliminate that layout.
Oh, sure.
To make, and not to interrupt sure. you, well, Mr. Hume, but in addition to
about
what Tom is saying and hasn't been mentioned that I think helps with the discussion of I think what you're talking about is we can't charge the municipality of Alton based upon Illinois state statute. We would, unless we come up with a resolution, we cannot charge them. We would have to, in current law, subsume that cost. We wouldn't be able to charge them over 4 payments $100,000 or $125,000 a year under the current law. And that's a very serious problem for us if they choose to dissolve. I'm sorry, Mr. McRae.
It's okay. No, I'm going to have to leave here shortly. I just think it's a very – as we look at this going forward, it sounds good to eliminate, and it may make sense in some of these situations, but that would be a very real cost and a very real responsibility that the county would have to assume completely. If we've already incurred a cost of $76,000 to one township, I wasn't aware of that. Then that is something we should find a remedy for, because it is, so that's my only comment.
Well, and as you know, in township government, some townships may have 7 employees, with some other township has a lot less doing the same work. You know, in Edwardsville, they have very few people doing assessments, much less than that.
Right, but in the case of Wood River has 7, and they all, as a township, they pay their employees, and they don't incur any cost to the county. Then they take care of it, but. The Godfrey Township, it's just the assessor that's elected. That's it. There's no other except the secretary who does it. So they rely on us to do it for them. So then if you live in Wood River, you're paying your own assessors, plus for the county to go out and assess Godfrey, which is just not a just system.
Right.
We need to come up with a resolution then that at least fixes that, and then one that can be proactively looking forward to if these larger cities do dissolve, that we have a backup plan for that.
Well, I think the Tax Cycle Committee has been looking at that, and good job, Mr. Chapman. For seeing that and definitely doing good for all here.
And to say, though, that some have more and some don't have very many at all, that's correct. But some are very rural. Fort Russell is a very rural township, and they don't they have farms, and the assessments are much more there aren't as many properties. Wood River Township has about 39,000 people. So you have a lot of different properties. There's a lot of different more. There are several. The job is much bigger. And so to say that we can't compare one to another necessarily, the same thing is true with road districts and things like that. In some townships, the road district may have 5 or 6 miles. Others may have 50. And so it's really, oftentimes it's an apples and oranges comparison. So it is something that requires a lot of thought. But this assessment thing is a very real cost. It's something we should, if we need to have state laws, we need to be proactive in finding out, okay, what do we do? What does the state provide that says if Godfrey dissolves, then we should be able to somehow be made whole. The county should be made whole for the cost of that assessment, I would think, right? That's what I think. And if the laws aren't in place now, we need to be proactive because, you know, that's something that's going to be a very real cost to us.
Yeah, and I wouldn't want to do anything to also in that endeavor to stop people from consolidating. There's obvious benefits to consolidation. The number of taxing districts in Illinois is way larger than it should be. And I wouldn't want to be an impediment to consolidation, but certainly these are issues in doing that. No, they do pay.
The problem is that agreement is we only charge them 50% or 75%. So, like in the case of Godfrey, I think we still have to eat $75,000. You know, so they're either still taking advantage of 25% or 50% where the county pays for it. But there is an agreement, but it's just not the full 100%.
The other problem with that resolution, as it was written, as it's actually being practiced, Mr. Tricano, is that it says, well, if you can't do it in part or whole, we'll do it. But we'll only charge you 50% or 75%. So one township, at least if I remember, and I believe I remember what was mentioned by the assessor yesterday in our meeting, I don't think they assessed one of their properties. We assume all of it, and they have two personnel in that township, if I understand correctly. They don't do one assessment. We do all their assessment, and then they get a discount. So the charge, so we eat $75,000, and at least if I understand my colleagues on the committee, and there's a couple of them here, we don't think that's fair to the townships that do their own work.
And are you working on towards a resolution within the tax cycle committee?
Yes, ma'am. And
bring that forward to us.
Yes, and it's a bipartisan effort. We've been in communication with everybody on the committee, in the committee, and we're. And also, I have to give much appreciation to Mr. Ezra, who helped come up with a preliminary resolution and who is working on the whole concept of how do we hold towns accountable that dissolve their township for their cost. Yes, ma'am.
Any old business?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Yes.
I said a question. I guess it falls in old business. I don't know where else to ask it. But on the purchase orders that we have before us today, I just had a question. Somebody can help me understand an item that was purchased by a credit card from Amazon for a white noise sound machine. I think I know what that does, but could somebody tell me what that does?
I have a couple other questions on there also. And
so that where Crystal Hale, is that where she's from? Okay. Well, so it is what I think it is, but I was just going to make sure it wasn't. It's an area where there is a need for privacy and it's a legitimate purchase. That was my point, because I didn't know Crystal Hale or where she worked at.
She works for the court system.
Okay. I'm fine with that, though. Thank you.
Thank you. Just real quick. And this just goes back to what this committee has said all along is I see hand sanitizer, 360, which we need. It's flu season. I understand that. I see scissors that are $51. I know these are minor minute cost, but for like six scissors, that's like $8 to $10 a pair for a scissors. I'm going to say, and more ink pens on there that are a large sum of money that are special, that are like $75,000. Somebody needs to get a handle on purchasing, and I want to make sure that some of these charges are not in excess, which seem to me to be. And it's been brought up at this committee multitudes of times that pens, scissors, things of that nature may be at an excess. And we'd like a better handle on this. And
yes, and we've made some big changes as far as how we purchase some supplies and how we've done in the past. Many of the committee may or may not know that Linda Ogden is now our new purchasing director, which is a position, yes.
Okay.
Is a position that's provided for in the purchasing ordinance, and it's a very important position. It's required. That it's going to allow us, you know, if people do go to single source purchases and so forth, she does need to sign off on it. She's going to be making some recommendations and then following this really closely. If you have any purchasing issues like that, I'd certainly, Linda, take a look at this and then get back to the committee. You know, I do believe that in the past, as far as purchasing office products and so forth, I feel like we may have been getting a bad deal. And going forward, we're going to get a better deal.
Can I get a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.